Let's begin. OpenAI for Language Learning explores artificial intelligence through informal conversations between two longtime colleagues in language education and digital technologies, Matt Schultz, professor of German and director of the Language and Applied Research Center at San Diego State University, and Phil Hubbard, senior lecturer emeritus at the Stanford University Language Center. Rather than offering hype or tutorials, these conversations, occasionally with guests, are based on learning, reflection, evidence, and lived experience, with no prior AI knowledge assumed. Language educators, learners, and enthusiasts are invited to an informed discussion where emerging technology meets human communication.
All right. Let's get started, Phil.
Okay. Welcome, hopefully once again, to Opening AI for Language Learning. My name's Phil Hubbard from Stanford University.
And I'm Matt Schultz from the university here, where I'm also sitting and where we're recording this, San Diego State University.
Okay, great. So in the last episode, which was Stuff You Need to Know Part 1, if you're a teacher or an administrator, we talked about the various competency frameworks, four of them that had been proposed, in particular, the UNESCO 2024 AI competency for teachers. We emphasize the importance of having a basic understanding of what generative AI is. And at some level, that includes understanding that it's just math applied to creating language forms. Matt will explain that it's a lot more complicated than that. And we encourage you to read the first part of our paper on this, which we'll be plugging throughout the talk. Now, you may already have a basic understanding of Gen AI, but it's always good to go back and take another look at it because it changes so quickly. So, Matt, what were the first four areas in part one that we talked about?
I'm really glad to have a kind of cheat sheet. We did talk about prompts that I needed, which is basically the user input, the input either from the student or the teacher input for the machine. We very briefly touched upon ethics, and really what the main thing was we were saying is this is such a large topic, we'll probably do another conversation just on challenges with ethical challenges with the advent and rapid development of generative AI. And we touched on the two main uses of these very powerful tools, and not only the two main uses in language education, but also generally, and as the chatbots and translation or machine translation. Yeah, I think let's dive right into the next part. We'll focus on the final six of those 10 knowledge areas. The 10 knowledge or skill areas are basically part three of this position paper that we are using as the basis for these conversations. We're also using this paper as the basis, essentially for our learning. And I mean, Phil and I, when I say our, for our learning about generative AI, because as Phil already said, this is moving all the time and it's moving rapidly. So you, the people who are listening either to this live recording or to the recording later, you're surely not the only ones learning. We are learning too, and we're using those conversations also for our learning and our benefit. Pretty much Phil and I kind of liked it a lot, and we decided to kind of share this a little more widely, basically. The goal is to help teachers with a kind of rather practical foundation, but that is kind of clearly informed, and help them to make their own informed decisions. This is always this human at the center, human in the loop, and that human very often is the teacher. And in order to be in the loop, we as teachers need information. Sometimes we might need some guidance. Sometimes we might need some help. And the two of us are trying to provide this as best we can. Let you do the intro to the six remaining areas.
Okay. So as we did before, I'll first define briefly what the topic area is, and then give one or two examples from my experience and pass it on to Matt for him to add his experiences. But before we get into that, I do want to make it clear that these are just starting points. This isn't a syllabus for a course. It's a way of making sense of something that is pretty overwhelming to a lot of people. And we've been there, and that's why we're trying to give you our experiences to show, you know, at least where a couple of paths have gone in this great adventure.
So, yeah, we're well aware of the fact, and I hope so are you, because you're kind of listening to us, so you have an interest in this general topic. Completely avoiding these powerful technologies or rejecting them wholesale does not seem to be a good option, basically. Mm-hmm. So we need to find a way of, well, in Buddhism, they very often call it acceptance. we need to find a way of acceptance in some way, but still also being aware of our main tasks as language teachers and educators in general, mm-hmm. and having a certain level of caution and consideration for also the challenges and pitfalls in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, following an Eastern philosophy there, this is a never-ending quest, but you can also think of it as it's a journey of 1,000 miles that begins with 10 steps. And we also hope that the final part of the paper, which we'll talk about in our next episode, how you get there through generative AI, sustained integrated professional development, that will help you.
So at this stage, we're offering, which essentially is our considered and researched opinions in some way. Why is this so? I'll just use an example from the previous conversation, prompting. It changed a lot. Things are also changing, and we are learning. That is changing too. So it's very fluid in many ways. So it's a process in which we're all in together. So Phil and I are also learning. And in parts, and there I'll just speak for myself, well, I have also changed my mind about a couple of things in some way. This paper we wrote, kind of the bulk of it last summer, things have changed even since then, basically, in the intervening months.
Okay, so let's go ahead and jump into these six more things that we believe teachers need to know now. So the fifth one is course and lesson creation. The sixth, classroom assessment. We don't touch on the large scale assessments like Educational Testing Service deals with, but more things that are under the teacher's control. The seventh is a big area, student misconduct, and there we also include not just overt and conscious misconduct, but also misapplication. The eighth one, learner training. The ninth, recognizing the difference between general and targeted generative AIs. And 10, also noticing that other forms of AI that are not generative, Matt has referred to these, of course, looking historically, but they're still out there now. And also developing. So let's go ahead and start with the definition of the first one. So course and lesson creation. We have a lot of examples and some, I have to say, wild claims about how, when prompted appropriately, Gen AIs can produce syllabuses, individual lessons, tasks, assignments, even content. And while that's true, it doesn't mean it does a good job of these. And so any AI output has to be carefully reviewed and edited for hallucinations, for example, and other things. My own experience here, I no longer teach. I retired in 2020, but I do try to work with teacher professional development. And I think about what I used to do and use that to help me get a handle on some of this stuff. So a few weeks ago, I made a web app for practicing English articles. And I just asked ChatGPT to use, basically to prompted it to develop a web app that would take a text that you would input, strip all the A's, ands, and these out of it, and then present it to the learner, and the learner can do all this on their own, to reconstruct the missing articles and then provide feedback at the end on which ones were gotten right and wrong, and even to some degree why. In one version, you can even output this to an AI and use a specific prompt that's provided to get more detailed contextualized feedback instead of just general feedback on the use of articles. I also use AI as a learner, and I asked ChatGPT 5.2, for example, to generate 40 topics for me in novice French, and I used a few of those then. I looked at the list and picked out ones that seemed relevant to me and used them to prompt scenarios for the Google Translate practice app that I've been using to help me learn French and Spanish.
Great.
What's your experience here?
Yeah, I guess professional development for teachers is a common point there. To give a concrete example, I had a conversation with Shana Samadian, who is helping us with this recording of the conversations and this webinar about teaching lesson planning to teachers, or kind of upgrading them, doing professional development in a course. And there I would think it is wrong to use these tools, because you cannot use them to teach this kind of thing. It's a very powerful tool. So a teacher will have to be able to create their own lesson plans first and do it multiple times before it's meaningful and useful to use this tool basically as a shortcut to simply create a generator and activity. Mm-hmm. So as you did, Phil, you've created activities kind of all your professional life, basically, without such a tool. Mm-hmm. That means you're able to kind of pick from ChatGPT the kind of prompts that you were asking for that are actually meaningful and useful. And that takes some professional expertise. And quite frankly, it takes some practice. So don't immediately jump at the tool. It's not something for lazy ones, because then the outcome will be boring, to say the least. And there were a couple of anecdotes that circulated on the internet where people commented and said, yeah, that teacher probably used kind of generative AI to create that lesson plan or something. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't a good point. Basically, I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be very tricky. I'm not directly connected to teacher education programs, who are taking teacher candidates through this now. But it will be interesting to see the degree to which teacher educators are building AI lesson creation into that, so that students are getting this from the ground up at the same time that they are developing the skills in putting something good together, or maybe using AI to give them feedback on the hand-produced ones that can actually be useful. It's an open question, but it'll be interesting, as all of this is. Be interesting to see where it's going. Okay, for assessment, again, focusing on small scale, either formative or summative assessment for the classroom. We know you can use Gen AI for creating and even grading quizzes and exams, for assessing writing, and especially for student self-assessment, getting formative feedback on things, or even just getting quick feedback as to their understanding of concepts or ability to put those concepts into action. Ideally, at least right now, this should be an aid and not a replacement. Again, we have to have the skilled human teacher in there making sure that people are not practicing junk. So my own experience, when I'm using the Google Translate practice for my French and Spanish, I'm constantly quizzed. That kind of like the same thing if you use Duolingo. The basic learning is through quizzing. And I find that useful. I'll say something in a moment about how I think it can be used more effectively than it might look like on the surface. There's also a lesson I learned. I do a lot of reading in this, and I know Matt does too. We don't have time in these talks yet to go into any depth in what we read, but a chapter in a book on AI applications in applied linguistics, a chapter from Chun and Barley in 2024, they demonstrated that for Korean, they used ChatGPT to generate comprehension questions from readings and compared that with human-generated questions. And they found that the questions generated by, and this was ChatGPT 3.5, so an earlier version than we have today, certainly, the questions were pretty good, actually, compared to the human ones, on roughly on a par. But the distractors were way off, that the AI could not generate distracting distractors. Matt? How about you?
It's a general problem. I think the one thing to bear in mind, this was the kind of basic understanding of Gen AI. These are chatbots and large language models. They're not tutors. There is no AI part in there that knows anything about tutoring. There is nothing in there that can structure a feedback algorithm. As we have had tools, and we'll come to those in a second. I teach German, and I've so far deliberately shied away from using Gen AI tools for assessment, simply because I wanted to try out other things. I use Gen AI in the classes I teach, but not for any classroom assessment as yet. I'm not saying this is not possible. There are huge discussions about this. I just attended a course on getting your teaching AI ready. That's what they called it. And of course, we also talked about assessment. The main keyword that came up here, came up in this context, and I do want to mention here, is transparency. Teachers need to be transparent about their use of these generative AI tools, especially in assessment. So when things were generated, we need to make it clear to our students that they were, because we're asking them to make clear when they use these tools. So we need to do it too. And we certainly need to make it clear when we use them as a grading aid or to allocate points and things like that. Because, and there always needs to be, this is one of those areas with the human in the loop. The ultimate responsibility for the grades is still with the teacher. No teacher can defend a grade by simply saying, oh yeah, but ChatGPT said, or something. The teacher gave that grade, so they need to be able to defend it. They need to be able to make it transparent in some way. And for that, you need to kind of disclose sometimes what tools you used. One of the things I have done, I just haven't used it practically. There are also some AI tools that are dedicated to specialized in assessment tasks. One of the companies, and I have no share in this company whatsoever, I just find their work interesting, is PackBack. And they're looking at things like discussion boards and helping with the nitty-gritty of essay writing and things like that. And they have advertised too that it is the teacher in the end, even using their tools, basically. So this one for me is a very important one, with the human in the loop and the teacher staying aware and staying in control because of that awareness.
Oh, yeah, I fully agree. Okay, so student misconduct, or again, we think of mostly as conscious, but it can also be due to confusion of what's possible. This is a subset of ethics, but we decided to give it its own category because it's so front and center for teachers and administrators and for students. So it can mean deliberate cheating. It can mean not citing AI contributions to something that you collaboratively created with AI. It could even be, you know, things like reading AI summaries in place of assigned content, sort of like going back to the days of reading Cliff's Notes for long novels instead of actually reading the novel. And underlying all of this, and Matt's already mentioned this, is the importance of clear guidelines for what misconduct is. This is something that teachers and higher levels of the organization need to be aware of. So I certainly become aware of all of this from doing the ethics paper, but I don't have students myself, and I haven't had students since 2020, so pre-gen AI. I do have to deal with this issue in terms of academic misconduct as a journal associate editor and as a reviewer. And as an associate editor of a journal, it's trying to make sure that the journal, support the journal's position, whatever position it has, on the use of artificial intelligence in creating papers. And most journals now do have good statements, but they're still evolving. I have spotted obvious ones that had huge amounts of AI in them or were entirely written by AI, and, you know, without directly confronting, this is as a reviewer, without directly confronting the author, just went in and showed places where the reference list didn't support what was being done in the journal, and so it was rejected on the in the article, so rejected on the basis of that. And also, as an associate editor, being concerned with reviewers using AI to write their reviews simply by putting the paper into an AI, ChatGPT or something, which is bad on a number of levels.
Right. It's especially thinking about this editing and reviewing and article writing is where it puts us in the position of being the ones generating or creating the text, depending on what the kind of choices we make. And I think it's very similar for students. There's been a lot of discussion also in mainstream media. The phrase that was sometimes used was the death of the college essay, so you can't use it for assessment anymore. I already said that I participated in a course here at San Diego State University recently. There was under the buzzword of AI ready, was getting our teaching AI ready. And what I found interesting is the way we did it. So I looked at one course that I taught before and will teach again to have a little bit of time out to think what can and cannot be and should not be done with generative AI. So first thing we looked at was the AI disruption. So we would generate answers to our own assignments and tasks, basically, to see what these tools can do and reflect on this. We would use this data to reflect on our assignments, graded components of the course, mm-hmm. and how much AI could or could not be play a role. Even with things like presentation or whatever, of course, the script for the presentation could be generated. Mm-hmm. And then we looked at the student learning outcomes that we were planning for the course or that are in the syllabus of the course, and looking at how these are impacted by these Gen AI tools, potentially or already kind of realistically, basically. And then using backward design, so starting off with looking at the learning outcomes, going back and saying, oh, so kind of what assignments do I need? What do I need to change? How can I change it? And do I need this assignment at all? Maybe I should drop it. Maybe it was not the right thing to do in the first place, AI or not. But AI gave me the opportunity to think about it. So very often, I think, and particularly in assessment, it's not so much a question of learning about the technology, but to use the technology almost as a trigger for teacher reflection, to basically use the opportunity. Yes, it is a disruption, and sometimes it's very frustrating, that disruption, but using it as an opportunity to think, what am I actually doing here? What am I achieving? What am I doing for the students as a teacher? And then, yes, also, how can I use these AI tools to achieve these goals and help students to achieve these goals?
Okay. Well, and we don't have time to talk about it, but just to leave the audience with a thought, don't forget about teacher misconduct too. Okay, the eighth area is learner training. This is something I've been thinking about and writing about for well over 20 years, actually. How do we prepare students to not only be users of technology, but to use it effectively to support their goals? And that's what it is for Gen AI. How can students use, cooperating students at least, how can we help them use Gen AI effectively in pursuit of their own learning objectives? This includes not just initial training, but also ongoing monitoring and discussion. And importantly, it presupposes that the teacher is competent in using the material for language learning and so can give good advice. You can't be a coach if you don't know the sport at all. So again, I don't have any experience with students directly for learner training with Gen AI, but I have had to train myself as a learner with the Google Translate practice in the listening mode. The presentation is, you have a topic, it generates a short dialogue, and the dialogue goes turn by turn. And so at, say, the intermediate mode in Spanish, I hear somewhere between 2 to 4 sentences on the topic of that dialogue. I mean, one of the characters speaking, and then there are a list below of 4 to 6 words, that some of which were in that turn and some of which were not. And so the goal is to get it right. You pick out the words correctly that were in that piece. If you just listen to it while you're looking at the words and try to see, oh, I heard that word, I heard this word, then you can get the right answers, but you're not really processing the language. So part of my learner training is to say, don't look at the possible responses until after you've finished hearing what the person said or what the AI said. So that's an example. There are other things I do with the app because of my experience as a language teacher, knowing what's more likely to help language learning. How about you, Matt?
I think very much it is a collective process, as in one is working with the student. So it's a kind of participatory training when I try to do it. I already talked about the transparent use of Gen AI by a teacher. Mm-hmm. So, and that is also part of training, I would think. So I'm telling students how I use Gen AI tools and discuss it with them. of course, we're discussing things that we mentioned already, like assessment, and I walked them through the what is called the AI statement. That's what we call it here at San Diego State University as part of the syllabus. So basically clarifying for students, here are the expectations within this course for generative AI. And that's a particular challenge, I would think, in language classes, because a lot of the activities that we do in language learning, always have done, are things like paraphrasing, using somebody else's text, filling in blanks and just changing one word, modifying sentences or whatever, transforming an active sentence to a passive sentence. And all of a sudden we're telling them, oh, but in this area you can't do it and you can't use a tool and you can't look it up this way. You would look it up in an electronic dictionary. So those things are non-trivial in a sense. And they bear repeating. This is not a just one-off conversation. I'm trying to thread this through kind of all the classes of a semester and always trying to be open to answer questions from students and also pose questions to genuinely engage in a conversation about this topic that concerns all of us and about which all of us are learning to, yes, admittedly various degrees, but still learning.
I like your point about training really begins with teacher modeling.
Yes, it is the old-fashioned idea of teacher modeling. Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to shift to a couple of areas that are more raising awareness, I think. And that's first, the notion of general versus targeted, I think in the paper we also call them embedded Gen AIs. So general Gen AIs, those are the all-purpose ones like ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, Copilot. Those are the ones we've been talking about a lot, although you've given some examples, and I have too, of more targeted ones. These are the specialized ones. Things like Grammarly, Notebook LM from Google, Duolingo Max, as opposed to Duolingo as a whole. Duolingo also uses AI, but Duolingo Max is more the chat bot that will interact with you. And it's important to realize that Gen AI can be embedded in a way that's sort of hidden. We don't know what's under the hood of a lot of this stuff. We can guess sometimes. So again, for me, that Google Translate practice uses Gen AI to create interactions from prompts for greater personalization. And it's that personalization, it's important to me. So instead of having to just follow a textbook, I knew I was going to the French-speaking part of Switzerland just before Christmas last year. And I was going to see my granddaughters. And I wanted to be able to say a little bit more in French about my granddaughters. So I asked Google Translate practice to generate some dialogues talking about my granddaughters. And it did, and I learned some stuff.
Yeah, I've tried this out. The language I teach is German. The language I studied was Russian. So I've tried it out in those two languages. And this was mainly using kind of chatbots. And the one thing that works really well with those general tools is the actual conversation, is the chat. Whether you do this in another language, especially if you're not concerned overly with factual accuracy, you just want to have a almost natural kind of authentic conversation, especially in writing, that one, these tools are exceedingly good at. I did a large part of my PhD and research work was on feedback, on corrective feedback. That is something these general tools are not very good at. It's a bit like if you have a conversation partner who happens to speak the language perhaps as their first language, and if you ask them about grammatical feedback. It's kind of his hit and miss, not his and miss, hit and miss, whether you're going to get a good feedback, basically. And you will have to be the judge of it, which is difficult for a learner. Yeah. And that's very similar with, kind of even more so with a machine. There are dedicated tools, and they're still around. They've been around for a while, that are actually meant for tutoring. So these AI tools that have a tutoring element in them for a variety of subjects, of course, they work better for things like math and computer science, but they are our colleague Judah Hyde, for example, always had an intelligent tutoring system for teaching German at the elementary and intermediate levels, basically for one particular course with materials, and it provided feedback on sentence-based activities. But it required a very different tool set in there. It didn't have a large language model. It had a dictionary, it had a computational grammar, but it also had a feedback filter to give feedback at the right time, to give feedback on the right parts of the errors and not everything at once and things up, basically, and it would check for the accuracy. So it would give corrective feedback in some way. So yeah, that's one example.
Okay, our final one is recognizing, and again, Matt's been talking about this off and on throughout the previous two episodes, that generative AI is what's front and center, but there are other types of AI. Other types of AI show up, for example, in language apps, in speech recognition, in you know, building models for spaced repetition, especially for vocabulary learning, and you know, probably a number of other areas. The main point here, again, is not everything is Gen AI. And since Matt knows a lot more about this than I do, I'm going to turn it over to Matt.
You leave it to me. you already had a good example. Again, this is not the kind of commercial advertisement. You had Grammarly in there, which is kind of heavily used by many people in their first language, in their for their second language. These grammar checkers, the tools that provide corrective feedback, have other forms of AI built in if they're working well. And they need to. That's how they work. And these are the long traditions of artificial intelligence research and development, going back to a couple of men meeting in 1956 and coining that term at a workshop, basically. And I think here, yes, you began this last area of the 10 knowledge and skill areas by saying this is more about awareness of those things. One doesn't need to know everything about them, but it's really the awareness of things. There's more out there. At the moment, there's a lot of discussion about generative AI. And very often we tend to use, I believe all of us, tend to use a shorthand for generative AI, namely simply AI. And that seems to include everything else, and it does not. I think that's the
Just to summarize this, and actually take us back to the first four as well. After we finished the paper, of course, so it was too late to get it into the paper. Matt, you found another way of clustering these 10 points. Why don't you tell us about that?
It's pretty much in preparation for these conversations. That's when I, of course, and I'm sure you did the same, Phil, thought about those things again. The first five are what I would call more functional and ethical questions, areas in some way. So it is the whole big area of ethics, student misconduct, in a way, kind of already intersecting also with ethics in there, learner training being more functional and less kind of ethical, but also has these ethical elements. Awareness of what we just did, the general and targeted Gen AIs, and the awareness of other forms and areas of artificial intelligence research and development. Again, more functional in some ways, so kind of more things to think about, more areas for teacher reflection rather than teacher learning necessarily, and trying out and practice. Whereas the other five, adapting and creating prompts was the one in the last episode we started off with, is of course, it's a very practical area, just a genuine skill area where it takes practice. Of course, reflection helps, is kind of more about generating things. Chatbots, same thing. What do they generate? What can I use there? What translation gets generated? What can I use? How should I use it? Same with the course and lesson creation, activities generation. Can I generate authentic texts or not? Questions of that kind. And of course, same with assessment. What can I generate? How can I use them as tools, basically, in a very practical sense? It just helped me to reflect on those and group them and see their intersections and connections, basically, which I also believe. So these 10 don't exist on their own on some kind of little island. They're all integrated with one another in some way.
Yeah, and that's a good point. This shows that we, you and I, we're still learning along with everybody else out there. And I've been thinking there are probably some things we could add to these 10 or different ways we could slice them and connect them. But again, this is a starter that we hope is going to be useful. It's actually been very useful for us. And what we've done here is said, okay, this is what we think you should learn about, and to some degree, why you should do that, where these ideas came from. Next time, we're going to talk about how. We'll introduce this notion of generative AI sustained integrated professional development, which is the final part of the paper, both motivating that and offering a set of principles to help people actually perform it.
We realize that, I mean, we mentioned the paper a lot. We mentioned a couple of other things. Those are sometimes better digested in writing, particularly if you're just listening to the audio version of this conversation, which we're hoping to publish and podcast later. There are three tiny URL.com addresses that we created to provide some context, written context for these conversations. Starting at the bottom here, tinyurl.com and then genai-sipd. So genai-sipd. That links to the paper we now mentioned a couple of times. It's an open access paper, so you can just click that link and you will get to the PDF or web version of this article of our position paper on the professional development that we see necessary for teachers in the Gen AI context. The other two, the first one, OAILL for opening AI for language learning, Pod, P-O-D, one word, O-A-I-L-L, P-O-D, links to Phil's website, and P-P-O-A-I-L-L, links to my website, where we are going to have a static page, always updated with relevant links, different written information, basically, to back up and contextualize these conversations. Yeah, I think we're a little bit longer than we hoped we would be. So this is the time to say goodbye. And thank you very much for listening. Until next time.
See you next time.
We are grateful for the support for Opening AI for Language Learning by the Language and Applied Research Center at San Diego State University and the Southern Area International Languages Network, SALIN, which is part of the California World Languages Project. Our producer and editor is Chris Brown. Mario Condo-Fanol is the production coordinator of WILE, Live conversations are moderated and promoted by me, Shanaz Ahmadian. And remember, artificial intelligence is no substitute for natural ignorance. Until next time.